Well, now we're turning to Gaza. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu yesterday warned his country to prepare for a long conflict with Palestine as US President Barack Obama called for the first time for a humanitarian ceasefire in the region. After a night of bombardment on Gaza that has been described as the most severe of the last 3 weeks of violence, Reuters journalist Dan Williams joins us now on the line from Jerusalem. Dan, thank you for taking our call. Fill us in on what happened last night.
Well, as you noted, there was an escalation, and certainly the mood music of escalation yesterday on both sides of the border. There had been sputtering lulls or even truces over the weekend. Nothing organized into a more extended ceasefire, despite the efforts of several world powers, a call by the UN Security Council, by the US President Obama, as you noted. And what happened yesterday is Israel signaled that it needed at least another week for its main mission on the ground, which is the destruction of cross-border tunnels used to threaten its southern communities with attacks by armed infiltrators, kidnappings, that sort of thing. And also at the same time, despite a de facto lull for the major Muslim festival of Eid al-Fitr yesterday, there was continued fighting, including two cross-border attacks by the Palestinians, which killed nine Israeli soldiers. So against the backdrop of those mounting military losses, the Israeli Prime Minister said the conflict would prove protracted, though I have to say I'm not hearing anything that would suggest it would go beyond the week that the military said it needs to deal with the tunnels. And overnight there was intensified shelling, possibly the most intensive shelling of this war, and we're hearing of as many as 30 fatalities, Palestinian fatalities, from that shelling since midnight.
30 fatalities since midnight. That is a huge figure. There was also that horrific attack on a playground yesterday. There's still a lot of varying takes on who caused that and how. I mean, where is that at the moment? The Israelis are saying it could be Hamas rockets that went wrong. Hamas, or local people rather, are much more inclined to believe it was an Israeli strike.
Well, as you rightly note, inclined to believe is, I think, the right way of putting it. There has been a lot of Israeli ordnance coming down on Gaza. Israel says it's doing its best to target combatants. There have been a lot of civilians killed as well. But the Israelis were very quick to say, and they provided aerial photographs that they say back this up, to say that the bombing, the shelling that you alluded to that killed at least eight children in the playground on the Muslim holiday was caused by one or two Palestinian rockets that fell short. There was also part of the nearby Shifa hospital that was damaged. The Israelis say that this has happened at least 200 times during the conflict. Palestinian rockets and mortars, that falls short. It's long been established that these weapons are not entirely accurate. Some of them are homemade. There is an entire underground munitions industry in Gaza. This is by Hamas's own admission. So that's not entirely, the Israeli account is not inconsistent with what we know about the weaponry and certainly the pressures of war within Gaza. But I think it's clear both sides, especially at a time when there are calls for a ceasefire, had a vested interest in avoiding responsibility for what was really an egregious incident of innocent casualties.
Absolutely. And Dan, I mean, are we ever going to get a definitive answer on this as to who caused these more controversial strikes, the one on the playground, the ones on the hospitals?
I'm not sure. The chance of an investigation is slim. If the Palestinians retrieve forensic evidence, no doubt these Israelis will doubt the authenticity of the evidence. Israel has been quite forthright and quick in saying it wasn't responsible. Israel has the entire strip saturated with surveillance, so we assume there is also real-time video. To the best of my knowledge, for now, they've published photographs. And I suspect, sadly, that this incident will basically be rolled up into many, many other incidents in more than 3 weeks of fighting. It probably won't linger in itself in the popular memory, given that this is going on and may go on for quite a few days.
Dan, last time we were talking to you, we were talking about the spread of unrest, if you like, to the West Bank. What has happened there since, and particularly in light of the attacks last night and yesterday, has that escalated at all?
No, certainly there is great unhappiness in the West Bank. I'm not aware of violence peaking beyond its peak of several days ago. Thursday, Friday, the last Friday of Ramadan, the Muslim fasting month. Now it's Eid. It's the joyous conclusion of the fasting month, or what's meant to be a joyous conclusion. I imagine many Palestinians in the West Bank, where they do have a measure of security and a measure of economic stability, are more focused on that. But certainly the sympathies are with Gaza, popular sympathies. I'm not aware of that having translated again into exceptional street violence.
And Dan, I mean, yesterday we were talking, as you said yourself there, about ceasefires, about lulls in fighting. Today we're looking at a massive escalation in terms of the death rate overnight. Does it seem at this point that the international community are going to influence when and how a ceasefire does take place? Or is it going to be entirely down to the Israelis when they decide that they've done enough?
Well, of course, the Israeli answer would be that they already entered at least one ceasefire that Hamas rejected. The Israelis also tarried quite a bit in terms of sending troops in on the ground. There was a call by the military, not just the government, to de-escalate with Hamas. So I don't think Israel would accept that it's up to it to stand down. It would say that that's Hamas's decision now. Obviously, they've tied several conditions to any eventual ceasefire, one of them being the demilitarization of Hamas. That's a reference to stripping Gaza of its ample cross-border tunnel networks and rocket stores, what rockets remain, which are assessed to be in several thousand, and that's by both sides. So another problem in achieving a ceasefire is, of course, it's very convoluted in terms of the negotiation structure. The U.S. Secretary of State, John Kerry, was here last week trying to get something together. The United States does not deal with Hamas directly because the United States, like the European Union and Israel, deems Hamas a terrorist organization. So even the mediator, Kerry, required regional mediators for his contacts with Hamas. Those regional mediators are Egypt and Qatar and Turkey. But even within those regional mediators, there are disagreements as to what extent Hamas should be accommodated. Egypt borders the Gaza Strip, as does Israel. Egypt shares Israel's concerns about Hamas. It views Hamas as a security threat. And Egypt blockades Gaza, as does Israel, and appears in no hurry to lift that blockade, which is a core demand of Hamas for a cessation of hostilities. Qatar and Turkey, meanwhile, are more sympathetic to Hamas's demand. So when you have such a convoluted structure, just getting a deal together is very dangerous. I'll just add, this is more anecdotal, but when John Kerry spoke 2 days ago, it was yesterday, about his difficulties in achieving a truce over the weekend, he said part of the difficulties simply came down to a misunderstanding. There was talk of a 12-hour truce, which was misunderstood to mean a 24-hour truce, or a 4-hour truce was misunderstood to mean a 24-hour truce. When you have basic timelines not being understood by the sides, I think it indicates how difficult the situation is.
Yeah, how chaotic. So then with the getting the timelines wrong, everybody's breaking these truces all the time. But I suppose it is interesting that Benjamin Netanyahu, the Israeli Prime Minister, despite ongoing efforts in the international community to broker some kind of agreement, is warning his own people this is now going to be a prolonged conflict. I know you say not longer than a week, but it's almost like he's ruled out the idea that this is going to stop anytime soon.
The way he phrased it, he had quite an exchange of barbs with the UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon yesterday. I don't remember anything of the sort in recent memory. The Security Council issued a statement 2 days ago on Sunday for an immediate humanitarian ceasefire. Now, Netanyahu put out a statement saying he had spoken to the Secretary General, and he basically described the statement as pro-Hamas. Which is highly unusual, especially given that it came from the Security Council. Israel's argument is, look, short-term truce, fine, but there have to be greater conditions for anything more durable. And Israel's demand is that Hamas, which it sees as a party committed to long-term confrontation with Israel until Israel no longer exists, Hamas be removed of its ability to threaten Israel. That's the tunnels and the rockets. So far, no one seems to have offered an applicable mechanism for how Hamas might be disarmed. Hamas refuses to disarm, obviously. But I think what Netanyahu and the Israelis want in general is an acknowledgement that that disarming structure has to be part of any durable ceasefire. For now, all we've had, to the best of my knowledge, is a statement by Barack Obama, the U.S. president, saying that Gaza would have to be disarmed as part of a final Israeli-Palestinian peace deal. As you know, such a peace deal is nowhere on the horizon. Mm. Peace talks between Israel and the U.S.-backed Palestinian administration in the West Bank broke down in April after that administration signed a power share with Hamas. They'd been in trouble previously because of Israel's settlement policy in the West Bank. So I think Israel was dismayed at the idea that its core condition, a disarmament of Hamas, was really kicked down the can, the figurative can kicked down the road to a peace agreement that really no one expects anytime soon.
Okay, well, Dan, thank you very much indeed for joining us. And of course, if you want to follow Dan's reporting on the situation there, you can follow him on Twitter. The handle there is @DanWilliams.
Today with Sean O'Rourke on RTE Radio 1.